Ecclesiastes, the first chapter. I would like to thank the Alls for putting up with me, and we've enjoyed fellowshipping with them. Brother Alls and I figured out two different ways to become millionaires this afternoon, but neither one of us are interested in money, so we'll probably not put that into action. It's good to see Brother Malo.
Good to see you too.
We always appreciate Brother Malo, his zeal for the Lord. You know, some people think that the Bible is for naive people. The people that think that are the people that haven't read it. You look at the Bible and it's not afraid of hard questions. The Bible is not afraid of your questions. You know, you look at the book of Job. The libraries are full of theodicies or defenses of God. They're full of books. Why do bad things happen to good people? And why am I disappointed with God? And why did God let this happen, that happen? I went down to a drug rehab place to see a fellow that was in there being rehabilitated. And he was kind of a smart, intelligent person. Well, he had a good mind. And I went to see him, and I began to talk to him, and he said, "I don't believe in God." I said, "Well, why not?" He began to tell me about some king over in Africa that because of his behavior had caused the death of a lot of children, let them starve to death. He said, "Why would God put up with that?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." I said, "I knew a boy that bankrupted his parents. I knew a boy that got in a fist fight with his dad. I knew a boy that broke his mother's heart and almost broke his parents' marriage up." I said, "I wonder why the Lord puts up with that." He said, "Oh, well, you got me." I said, "Yeah, and you remember where you'd be if the Lord didn't put up with stuff." Let me tell you something. There's a place where no sin ever goes unpunished. A place where no little child is ever mistreated. A place where nobody gets away with evil. You say, where is that wonderful place? It's hell. And if God wasn't long-suffering, that's where we'd be right now. And so, the Bible's not afraid of hard questions. I think of all these silly books that people write. You know, again, why bad things happen to good people, and why does God allow this, and why does God allow that? You read the book of Job, for instance. And here's Job, this perfect and upright man, and everything bad that you can think of happens to him. And his three friends come, and they've got their philosophies, and he finally talks them into silence, and then this young fellow, he mouths off for a while, and Job keeps saying, "I want to talk to God, I want to talk to God, I want to talk to God." Finally, the Lord appears. You say, "Now we're going to get to the bottom of this." And the Lord said, "Where wast thou when I laid the foundation of the earth? Where were you when I hung the sun in the sky? Where were you when I put the stars?" In other words, what God was saying is, "Job, I don't answer questions, I ask questions. And I don't explain." And you think of all the garbage man's right. You know, omnipotence doesn't defend itself. Omniscience doesn't answer questions. Perfect holiness doesn't justify itself. Big dogs don't bark. And we think of the wisdom of God's Word. Now, we come to the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes is like Job. It's a man dealing with his own heart. A man seeking wisdom. And a man asking hard questions. I'd like to entitle this sermon, The Pursuit of Profit. The Pursuit of Profit. In Ecclesiastes 1, verse 1 through 3, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? The book of Ecclesiastes is a book that uses several key words. One of the key words in the book of Ecclesiastes is the word profit. In chapter 2 and in verse 11, you see it used again. It was used there in verse 3. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? In verse 11 of chapter 2, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of the spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. What is profit? Well, the word profit means what is left over. If you start a business and you rent a building and you pay your taxes and you buy your product and you pay your help, at the end of the year, if you have anything left over, that's profit. There is in the mind of individuals the idea that some way or other in this world, we're going to end up in the black. You know, when I was a junior in high school, my favorite day of the year was always the last day of school. That was bigger than Christmas. And it was the last day of school, and I had 15 cents in my pocket, and I went in a store and bought a Mountain Dew. You say, now why did you tell us that? Because it was a big deal. I still remember it. It's the first time I ever had 15 cents in my pocket. And I always thought about the day when I would have something. I can remember when I was first married, I thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice to take your wife to McDonald's whenever you want to? Now, some of you have been there. Some of you don't know anything about that. I feel sorry for you if you don't know anything about that. Well, I could take my wife to McDonald's now. Of course, I have to take Levitor, and I'm not supposed to eat at McDonald's. Come think of it, I really don't want to. But here's the thing that I want you to understand. We've all got this idea that some way we're going to accumulate. We're going to rake something together. We're going to get somewhere. We're going to have something. That's our hope, naturally. But Solomon, he asked the hard question. He says, is there any profit under the sun? Now, Solomon was highly qualified for that quest. First of all, he had great ability. He could reason like Plato. He could observe like Aristotle. He could express himself like Demosthenes. He had great wealth. You and I can't make that test because we don't have the wherewithal to do it. He was in circumstances in the early part of his reign. There were no wars. There was no problems. He had peace in which to pursue these intellectual pursuits. And he came to the conclusion that the pursuit of profit always fails. And I would like to say to you today, and I don't mean it to be to depress you, but the pursuit of profit, that which is natural, that which is the natural desire, it always fails. Notice what he says in chapter 2, verse 1 through 10. He says, I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. I said, of laughter it is mad, and of mirth what doeth it? And then he talks about giving his heart to wine and so on. And then in verse 4, he gets started talking about his accomplishments. He says, I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards and planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my houses. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I get me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men. Now, you think about what you enjoy. He had it all. Nice houses, gardens, woods, ponds, music. And when he mentions there the delights of the sons of men, Hebrew scholars are agreed that he's referring to women. The man had 700 wives and 300 concubines. He said, and musical instruments, and that of all sorts. In verse 9, so I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not from my heart any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of my labor. Now notice verse 11. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of the spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Do you know what keeps you and I going? I remember hearing Wayne Newton out in Las Vegas talk about Elvis Presley. He said, the last time I saw Elvis Presley, he had that miserable look on his face. And Wayne Newton said, you know, you only see that look on the face of a man that has everything. You see, you and I, the thing that keeps us from total misery is that we don't have everything. And we're still dumb enough to think that there's something that we could have that will make us happy. It reminds me of a butcher. Every day he would be seen walking down the street and a pig would follow him. Well, you know what happens to pigs when they get to the butcher shop. And they said, how do you get that pig to follow you to the butcher shop? He said, oh, I just have a pocket of corn every day, and about every 10 feet I drop a kernel. Well, you know, that's the way the devil does us. He doesn't give us the whole bushel. Because if we had the whole bushel, we'd figure out it doesn't make you happy. But he drops a kernel every few feet. But Solomon was so miserable because he had it all. And when you have it all and you figure out it doesn't make you happy, you're really miserable. Now, why does the pursuit of profit fail? Several reasons he gives. First of all, because of the nature of nature. Notice, if you will, Ecclesiastes 1, verse 3 through 7. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, the sun goeth down and hasteneth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually. Verse 7, the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. What is he saying? He's saying this. The Ohio River runs near my house. The Ohio River runs down and drains many other rivers. It flows into the Mississippi. The Mississippi flows down through the middle of the country. When it gets to New Orleans and goes out into the sea, the Gulf of Mexico, at New Orleans, the Mississippi River is a mile wide and 90 foot deep. And it's flowing fast, much faster than the Ohio. The Amazon River makes the Mississippi River look like a trickle. And then you have the Rhine and the Nile and all the great rivers of the world. The day I was born, all those rivers were flowing into the sea. The day I die, the ocean won't be one inch deeper than it was the day I was born. And you know, that's true of your life. Job said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. And just as nature, you'll find that in your own life that nature never produces anything. It never produces a surplus. Another reason why the pursuit of profit fails is because of the pendulum of predestination. If you're afraid of the word predestination, I'll say the pendulum of providence. Let me read to you the pendulum of providence. Look in chapter 3. Years ago, the Birds made a lot of money singing this, these words. I don't know if they had any idea what they were about. But it says in chapter 3, verse 1, "To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die. A time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, a time to heal. A time to break down, a time to build up. A time to weep, a time to laugh. A time to mourn, a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together." I'll not read any more, but look at verse 9. How does he conclude this? "What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth?" What is Solomon saying here? He's talking about God's predestination. And he says that one thing that God has done is predestinated things so that this pendulum swings back and forth and man never gets ahead. How many times as a pastor I've gone to the hospital to see a little baby come into the world. And that same day I preached a funeral. You build a house, and the day it's done, the termites start on it. You get a new car, and you might as well just take a hammer and whack it, because that's what's going to happen. God is ordained. Well, let me read how he expresses it. He's talking about this same thing in Ecclesiastes 7. In verse 14, he says, "In the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider, God also has set one over against the other to the end that man should find nothing after him." In other words, God has ordained, God has predestinated things. He's predestinated this pendulum to go back and forth so that if you're looking for profit in this life, you're never going to find it. You're going to build up. You're going to tear down. You're going to rejoice. You're going to weep. You're going to say hello and you're going to say goodbye. And that's God's world. And he's made it to where you'll never find peace and you'll never find true profit and happiness in this world. Another reason why the pursuit of profit fails is because of the impartial appearance of providence. Now, notice carefully what I said. The impartial appearance of providence. Providence is not impartial. Romans 8:28 says, "All things work together for the good to them that love God, to them that are called according to His purpose." But let me tell you that while providence is not impartial, God works all things after the counsel of His own will. He works all things for the good of His people. But that doesn't mean that you will ever understand what God's doing. There's two things I know about every day. That whatever's happening, God's doing it. And that I don't know anything about. And I don't know what He's doing. When we speak of the impartial appearance of providence, what we mean, you young people here, I pray that you want to act wisely in life. And I trust that that's your desire. But let me say this to you. There is an apparent impartiality in providence that no matter how wise you try to act, that doesn't mean that bad things won't happen to you. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 15. "Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity." No one ever tried harder than I have to stay out of debt. I had two insurance companies go bankrupt on me. One of them was named Old Security Trust. I didn't get my middle daughter paid off. I can't remember if she was 11 or what it was. I mean, my wife was in the hospital 2 weeks, the baby longer than that, and the insurance company went bankrupt. I can tell you that I'm getting to where I can't draw off words. Inflation paid more for it than I did. But also piety. You say, Brother Ron, I'm going to live for the Lord. That's wonderful. You'll never regret that. But listen to what Solomon said. For all this I considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. No man knoweth either love or hatred by all that is before them. All things come alike to all. There is one event to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the clean and to the unclean, to him that sacrificeth and to him that sacrificeth not. As is the good, so is the sinner. As he that sweareth, as he that feareth an oath. What does it mean when it says all things come alike to all? What does it mean when it says no man knoweth either love or hatred by all that is before them? You will not know that God loves you by what comes into your life. You may dedicate your life to the Lord. You may end up with cancer when you're 20 years old. You may seek God's will for your life. Disaster, what appears to you to be disaster, may crash into your life. Providence appears to be totally impartial. But then what kind of a world would it be if no Christian ever got sick? If no Christian ever had a problem? That wouldn't be a world of faith, would it? But the pursuit of profit fails because of the impartial appearance of providence. The pursuit of profit fails because of the frustration of the future. Listen to what Solomon had to say in Ecclesiastes 2, verse 18 and 19. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 18 and 19, he says, "Yea, I hated all my labor, which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored." What do you think Solomon was thinking about when he wrote those words? Who knows what the name of Solomon's son was? Rehoboam. Let me tell you something about Rehoboam. He was a doofus. If Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived, Rehoboam was the stupidest man that ever lived. You know how long it took Rehoboam to destroy the kingdom that Solomon ruled over? Probably Solomon had read Dr. Spock's book. That's what we used to say. He should have beat Rehoboam with it instead of reading it. But Rehoboam, when his dad's dead and he's the king, the people come to Rehoboam and they said, "Now your dad was pretty rough on us. If you'll just back off a little bit, we'll be your subjects." And the old rulers, the wise counselors, come and they tell Rehoboam what to do. And he says, "Well, let me see what my buddies have to say that grew up in the palace." Well, there wasn't any time at all till they'd split the kingdom. May happen to you. Who knows? And then the pursuit of profit fails because of the vexation of envy. In verse 4 it says, or chapter 4 and verse 4, "Again I considered all travail and every right work, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This also is vanity and vexation of the spirit." If you want to be envied, have something, know something, and do something. The only way that you can escape envy is to have nothing, do nothing, and know nothing. What happens at every presidential election? What do you hear? "Let's take it from those that have it. Pull the guy down that lives up on the hill. Take his money." The blindness of greed causes the pursuit of profit to fail. Notice in chapter 4, verse 7 and 8, "Then I returned and saw vanity under the sun." And he describes it. "There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of his labor, neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity, yea, it is a sore travail." When I moved into Pennsylvania, Kentucky, There was a man up the road from me. He lived on an estate in a beautiful large house. He had an automobile repair garage with maybe 6 bays. Across the street, he had an apartment complex that perhaps 15 apartments. Now, you know what that man did? From daylight every day till way after dark, he had grease up to here. And he worked Monday through Saturday. On Sunday, he went over and worked on his apartments. Now, he never enjoyed his wealth. He did that till the day he died. He was a free man. He had great wealth, and he lived like a slave. That's the blindness of greed. It's funny what money does to people. You know, every now and then I'll take off and go fishing. And the other day my mom said to me, she said, "You know, you need to save." I said, "Let me tell you something, Mom. You know what you do with money that you save in old age? You buy pills with it." I said, "I think I'm going to go fishing. If I can't afford the pills, probably the government will buy them for me anyway." Do you understand what I'm saying? The blindness of greed. The irony of wealth. Turn, if you will, to Ecclesiastes 5. This came from a man named Randy Alcorn. He entitled it, "The More You Have." And let's notice how it goes. In Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10, "He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity." What is that verse saying? The more you have, the more you want. The more you have, the less you're satisfied. What does a millionaire want? 2 million. After you accumulate a lot of million, what do you want? 1 billion. You know, let me tell you, if you have $1 billion, do you need any more money? I mean, I could do everything I want to do on 1 billion. Verse 11. "When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with the eyes?" The more you have, the more people come after it. The more you have, the more you realize it does no good. You know, you get things. I have 2 boats. I don't mean yachts. You say, "What do you do with your 2 boats?" I look at them. Pat them when I go by them. I've got a knife collection. Never cut anything. I don't know why you think you need this stuff. You know, I said the other day, Socrates used to walk through the markets and he'd say, "Oh, how many things I do not need." God help us to be a little more like that. Verse 12. "The sleep of the laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. The more you have, the more you have to worry about." When the stock market falls, who worries about it? Verse 13, "There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt." The more you have, the more you can hurt yourself holding on to it. Verse 14, "But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand." The more you have, the more you have to lose. And then verse 15 and 16. "As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the win. The more you have, the more you leave behind. You know, it's hard to die rich. Do you ever think about that? Imagine if you were Sam Walton, you had $25 billion. You're thinking, if I could just get out of this bed, I could go to Europe. I could go fishing to Alaska. I could do anything. It's hard to die rich. Somebody said, what did he leave? And somebody said, he left it all. He left it all. Now, what is the preacher's conclusion? Well, two lines of thought. Notice, if you will, some verses that are strange. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. And then look at chapter 3, verse 12 and 13. I know that there is no good in them but for a man to rejoice and to do good in this life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. There are six places in the book of Ecclesiastes where it talks just like the verses I've read. Now, you say, what's Solomon saying there? Is he speaking as a hedonist? Is he saying, eat, drink, and be merry? That's all that matters? A lot of people read the book of Ecclesiastes, and when they read those six places, they think he's just throwing up his hands and saying, might as well just live for the world. That's not what Solomon's saying. Solomon is saying this: there's nothing wrong with wealth as long as you properly value it. If you put in wealth ultimate value, you're going to end up miserable. If you make wealth the goal of your life, if you think that you can end this life in the black, you're going to end up miserable. What will wealth do? It'll let you enjoy a good meal with your wife at a restaurant. Let you take a vacation sometime. That's what wealth will do. That's all wealth will do. It doesn't have ultimate meaning. It can bring a few simple pleasures. And so, six times he observes that. But then we come to this. True profit is not under the sun. We said that profit was one of those key words in the book of Ecclesiastes. Vanity is one of those key words in the book of Ecclesiastes. And under the sun is a key phrase in the book of Ecclesiastes. He says many times, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. True profit is not found under the sun. Now let me try to focus in on what the book of Ecclesiastes is all about. Solomon was a child of God. The Bible says that God loves Solomon. But Solomon was guilty of terrible sin. He turned away from the Lord. He married outlandish women who turned his heart from God. He was guilty of idolatry. But did you ever stop to think, there's a strange thing. David, his father, committed adultery and murder. But David left a 51st Psalm. Against thee and thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight. And he prayed over and over for cleansing. Let me ask you a question. Where is Solomon's 51st Psalm? Where is Solomon's Psalm of contrition and repentance? Now, I want to say this. There are two books that Solomon obviously wrote in his old age. One is the book of Ecclesiastes. The other is the book of the Song of Solomon. Did you ever notice that if there's two books in the Bible that are at the opposite end of the spectrum, it's those two books? The happiest book in the Bible is the Song of Solomon. The most miserable, jaded book in the Bible is the book of the Song of the book of Ecclesiastes. Let's read the first two verses of each book. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. The word vanity means like a soap bubble. It has no meaning. Here's a man that says, I've got it all. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. You know, it's kind of like the fellow that said, when you're 20, you don't care. When you're a teenager, you worry about what everybody thinks about you. When you get in your 20s and 30s, you don't care what anybody thinks about you. Then when you hit 40, you figure out nobody's thinking about you. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Can you imagine coming to the end of your life and saying, it's all for nothing. It's all a soap bubble. You see little children out with bubbles, blowing bubbles. What do you do with a bubble? It just pops. Now, turn, if you will, to the Song of Solomon. Chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, the Song of Songs. He says this is the greatest song that was ever written. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. What is the Song of Solomon? It's a love song, isn't it? Now, let me ask you men. Not too long ago, I was going through a box of family pictures, and I found some pictures of my wife and myself when we were dating, and I sat there and I looked at them, and I thought how beautiful she was and is. Did you ever feel more alive than when you were courting? Do you ever feel happier? You know, marital love is so wonderful that the Lord made it a picture of Christ in the church. And so, you have in one book Him saying, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. In the other book, you have Him saying, here's the song of all songs. The love of a man and a woman expressed to each other. What's the book of Ecclesiastes about? It's about a man that tried to find happiness in the world. What's the Song of Solomon about? It's about a man that had fellowship with Christ. What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Let me close by saying this. If you're here tonight without Jesus Christ, what are you thinking about? You say, well, Brother Ron, I'm going to make money. It's not going to make you happy. I'm going to make a name. The name of the wicked shall rot. I'm looking for happiness. You're not going to find it. But in Jesus Christ, there is life and life eternal. He said, I've come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. He said, my peace I leave with you. You say, why are you Christians always saying that Jesus Christ is the answer? Because Jesus Christ is the answer. You say, the answer to what? What's the question? You know, Charles Haddon Spurgeon was out one day taking a walk, and he met a young man, and he began to speak to the young man about Christ, and the young man said, I don't have any interest in Christ. He said, I have everything I need. And Spurgeon said, would you have a few moments? And he said, yes. He said, just take a little walk with me. And they walked to a poor tenement house. It was three stories. They went up to the second story. And Mr. Spurgeon knocked at the door. And a feeble voice said, come in. And they walked in. And there was a crippled lady laying in the bed. And she said, oh, Mr. Spurgeon, it's so good to see you. And Mr. Spurgeon said, how you feeling? She said, oh, I've got arthritis. I hurt like a toothache all over. And he said, how's your finances? She said, if it weren't for the gifts from the tabernacle, I'd starve to death. And the only heat I have, I can't afford any coal. The only heat I have is my apartment's here on the middle floor, and so I get some heat from the other two floors. And he said, do you have a lot of company? Oh, just hardly anybody. Now and then somebody from the tabernacle. And then Mr. Spurgeon said, well, I'd like to introduce you to this young man here. He's a very handsome young man. He's well. He's wealthy. He's educated. He's respected. But he's not a Christian. Would you trade places with him? And said that broken, sick woman reared up in the bed and said, trade places with him? If you're here tonight without Jesus Christ, I don't care who you are and what you got, there's not one Christian in here that would trade places with you. May the Lord have mercy upon you.